Bloody Elbow presents the sixth round post-fight show, which gives you a rundown and full analysis of the bouts that took place on this weekend's UFC event.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the sixth round post-fight show with me, Zane Simon, and my co-host, as always, Eddie Mercado. We are here once again coming to you guys just from the conclusion of UFC Vegas 46, Giga Chikadze, Calvin Kattar, going down at the Apex facility in Las Vegas, Nevada, with Calvin Kattar putting an absolute lesson on Giga Chikadze like he has not had in his MMA career so far.
Zane, Happy New Year. We made it to 2022. We finally got our first show. It feels like it's been years since we actually had a card.
It does. It does, man.
I didn't even know what to do with myself.
Well, you know, you've been putting on the pounds like Michael Bisping when.
Unfortunately, no. I got a jiu-jitsu tournament coming up, so I've been having to watch what I eat and behave myself. So, unfortunately, not. But yeah, Dominic Cruz roasted Bisping right off tip. Just first thing out of his mouth was essentially calling Bisping fat.
Man clearly resolved to be sassier in 2022 because Cruz came out with all the snark.
Yeah, I'm sure he got a lot of hate and a lot of maybe honesty from, you know, internet people who will comment, especially after he went after DC's commentary. You know, he's going to be under a microscope. So I'm sure he wanted to bring some extra personality tonight.
Yeah. And it's a good thing he did because, man, this undercard needed it.
Yeah, it really was bumming me out. I'm not going to lie. A bunch of decisions. I was like, man, this is what we're starting off with. This is the foot we're getting off on. Nah, but then the main event. Oh,
yeah.
That was incredible. What a performance. What a way to just stick to a game plan, push the pace, stick to the jab, bring out the elbows, mix in takedowns, not even necessarily to secure them or because that's the goal, but just to give Giga something else to think about.
Yeah, well, I think especially, like, you know, obviously it came off a mistake from Chikadze when he slipped on that kick, but getting that first takedown and just kind of sucking up a little time early in the fight, stopping Chikadze from landing those low kicks, stopping him from finding really a solid footing. I think that was huge for Kattar to really kind of steer back the momentum, reset, and as you say, give Chikadze something to think about, something else to work on, suck the gas tank just a little so that he could turn this into the kind of fight that he wanted to have, which was a slow pressure, you know, nose to the grindstone, high output, break you through work rate kind of fight.
It was a huge momentum shift because before that, I mean, Giga was letting his strikes go. He was throwing a bunch of head kicks and body kicks, right? And then Kattar got him down and he kept him there. So he let him know. He said, hey, one little mistake, you mess up on a kick, this is where you're going to be and this is where you're going to stay. And after that, Giga was way more hesitant to spam kicks like he normally does.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, that sucks, especially when you're getting pressured with the jab. That's tough.
It's great to see that from Kattar too, because it's not something, you know, it's something that was missing notably from his Max Holloway fight. It's something that he's kind of found and lost in other fights recently, which is, you know, that the basis of his striking off and setting up things up with the jab, not just going out there and slinging power at somebody and trying to put him away through sheer force of will and planting your feet and having the better chin. To see it come back out in this fight, like, this was the perfect moment to bring that out, to make this a pace war and not just, because, I mean, he traded with Chikadze a lot. There was a lot of times where they just sat down in the pocket and threw bombs at each other. But the pace war was the part of the fight that was always going to be Calvin Kattar's to win if he could press it.
Yeah, he fought a brilliant fight. It's one of the best performances he's ever had, like,
absolutely,
from start to finish, especially over the course of 25 minutes. This was insane, and he was such a big underdog coming in. That blew my mind. I was surprised.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote about it in our staff picks going into this. Like, for me, it really felt like, okay, there's an easy pick to make going into this for Chikadze just as a style pick. But the actual realities of the fight make this a very hard fight to predict. Like, there's a gut pick you can have where you can be like, okay, we've seen Cater struggle with kickers. We have seen Cater struggle to find his jab consistently against very technical strikers. And we know Chikadze throws with a lot of power and variety, and that he can make big things happen. He's exceeded expectations. He's not a man to be easily doubted.
I wanted Giga to win this.
Oh, I know you did.
I didn't expect him to win this.
Ooh, look at you with the big brain. Big brain going against your gut.
I know. Even a broken clock is right twice a day. Twice a day, Zane. Don't forget that. But it's just I couldn't trust Giga to go five hard rounds. I've never seen it.
And that was a big thing for me too. Like, I was picking Giga, but I was also just like, Cater is impossible to hurt. And if you're not going to hurt him, are you just going to be able to outfight him for five rounds?
Yeah. And I mean, he fades late in three-round fights, and Cater gets stronger, typically as the fight goes on.
I admit, I just kind of thought Giga might be the first guy to put him away, to hurt him badly enough to stop him inside.
Definitely has the tools to do it.
Yep.
But Cater was in full form tonight, and he had to be.
Yeah. I mean, I was just looking at the stats, and Calvin Cater has never landed more strikes in a fight. I do not think. Nope.
Yeah, he turned it on. It's like Max Holloway gave him the superpower. Mm-hmm. He gave him the volume perk.
At the very least, Holloway painted a very clear portrait of the kind of fighter you have to be to fight Max Holloway. And Cater took that lesson away from it.
And to be a champion, to be elite and fight at that level.
Yep. So, yeah, I mean, and two, to like, you know, he was landing hard and fighting well all through, but to pour it on like he did late in the fifth round was just really impressive. You know, the stats over on the UFC official counter page are much lower than the live ones they showed, which had him landing like 71 shots in the fifth round. But even still, landing 50 and throwing 125 in the fifth round for Calvin Cater, like he brought that fight home, no question.
Yeah, he stayed on the gas pedal. Mm-hmm. He really put on an elite performance. And, you know, Giga's someone who does not have a takedown threat whatsoever.
Mm-mm.
So there's no reason to step off the gas if there's not. I mean, Giga's best chance was sniping Calvin coming forward, which he was doing. But, you know, by the time he was really, but he would have these few blitzes here and there, but mm-hmm. the power, the snap wasn't there, you know, later into the fight. It was there at the beginning of the first round, but it quickly went away.
I will say, though, I do, if I'm looking at this as a fight of like, does this lay a blueprint for other people to beat Giga Chikadze, or does this, like, is this going to hurt his confidence or hurt his pride or anything, you know, change the way he fights in the cage?
Hold on, Zane. No, blueprint? Replicate that Max Holloway?
You did not let me finish. I was saying, I'm looking at this and asking that question, I don't see it. This feels like a fight that Giga Chikadze can come out of better than ever, honestly.
Yeah, you know? It's very, very much so in a way that Calvin came out of his Max Holloway fight.
This sets a bar out ahead of him, and it says, no, there is actually somebody who can take your shots, and you have to step it up higher. But it's not, Calvin Cater did not have an easy time. He out-wrestled Chikadze for one round, but he never got another takedown. It doesn't set some clear bar of like, anybody can just go out and get easy takedowns like Giga Chikadze, or Giga Chikadze is clearly there to be hit by this kind of strike or to have this kind of fight taken to him. You know, Cater did something that other people are going to struggle really hard to do. So,
yeah, very much so. Giga's, yeah. He's really talented. And the fact that he got to where he is, you know, coming from a karate background, transitioning to a kickboxing career, and then now into MMA, where, you know, he got choked out on the Contender Series because he faded in a fight before he, you know, made it here. So, you know, he has definitely vastly improved from then till now.
Yeah.
And he has a ton of potential. He just, you know, has some things he needs to clean up, and he'll be right back in there.
Yeah.
I feel you know what, man, a lot of UFC featherweights have to really take these hard lessons, like Brian Ortega and Calvin Kattar. Now Giga's going through it. It's like they're just really hard lessons at 145. They're beatings. Like, they don't get knocked out like light heavyweight.
I think prolonged beatings. I think it is the division, you know, it's a bit like how welterweight has been in the past, or was in, like, up into the GSP era, and now again in the Kamaru Usman era, maybe, or, you know, and really, actually, honestly, kind of only that division, if I'm thinking about it, where featherweight, the championship bar at featherweight has always been so much higher than where anyone else in the division is at, you know? Like, when Jose Aldo was ruling over that division for years, it was very much like, you can be elite and still not touch the champ. And then the people who came after him, who beat him, who had to get to that level, your Volkanovski and Holloway, like, they are at that same bar. They are setting the same bar afterward. And it drags the division up behind them, and it makes people have to come to these conclusions, because you can get a long way in that division not being anywhere close to the champion.
Yeah, for sure. It's a big gap, though.
Yeah.
And I feel like Calvin he turned a corner here. Like, he's proven himself as one of the elites.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, who doesn't want to see Calvin Kattar now turn around and fight Brian Ortega?
Oh, man. Yeah, that's almost a must. That's almost a must,
right?
I'm all for it. This was a standout performance here. This was crazy.
Great win for him, and like I say, I think for Chikadze, this is his moment to grow, and that it's not a huge major setback. It's a fight that, you know, a lot of us wondered when this would come for him. When would be the point where exceeding expectations would turn into running headfirst into a wall that you're not ready for. And it happened, but it's a fight that, you know, he didn't just go out and get sparked. He didn't just go out and get totally out grappled and wrecked. He just had a really tough fight. And it was awesome. It was awesome to watch every bit of it.
Yeah. It was good to see, especially, you know, after taking the beating he took in his last fight.
Yeah. For Kattar. I was reading an interview, the first 6 months, he's been out for a year, the first 6 months of that, he says, we're all just recovery.
Wow.
You know. So.
Good on him.
Yeah. As we've said multiple times before, the best way to end a bad fight night is with a great fight. Changes the picture of everything, changes our memory, and the whole feeling of the card, because now we've got to talk about the rest of this, and it was a major step down.
What are you talking about? We got a heavyweight rear naked choke.
Okay, that's fair. It's fair. Jake Collier in our co-main event.
Well, let me reframe that. That fight could have been really bad.
That fight could have been really bad.
We were spared.
It was gratefully short. And unfortunately, part of that is that it still kind of feels like Chase Sherman is kind of lost out there and deep in his head in ways that are not conducive to a combat sports career.
Yeah. You know? Someone added me on Twitter saying that there was some really sad backstory going on with Chase Sherman. I'm not aware of it, and if it's true, it's pretty sad, especially, you know, him getting taken out like this.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I know when he got cut from the UFC the first time, things apparently were pretty hard for him. I think, you know, he might have lost his house, and he had some, you know, some major financial woes and life woes in there. And I don't know that if all of that was cleaned up or not by the time he got back to the UFC, but his last three fights now are, they have all looked notably kind of, he's looked lost.
Yeah. Know? He's always been someone kind of inconsistent.
Yeah.
And kind of has just like a regional feel to his style all sure. in all. But, you know, he's always fun, at least.
Yeah. I mean, the problem is now it's just that when it used to be that he was a dude who he would get in a hard fight and he might not win them all, but he would be there for every moment slugging it out to the end. And now he gets in a hard fight and it feels like he just kind of falls to pieces.
He reminds me a lot of Jake Hune, like the way he fought.
Yeah.
He's kind of just gung-ho and just willing to stand and just bang. And whatever happens, it's going to happen.
Yeah. But hey, for Collier, now suddenly he's you know, he's got a win under his belt and he's making call. He's got somebody calling him out. He called out Andre Arlovsky, but he got Justin Taffa calling him out too. And I see no reason the UFC should avoid booking that fight. If you got two heavyweights at the bottom of the division who are interested in fighting each other at all, just do that. You know.
Well, you got a super heavyweight calling out that's a heavyweight. Right. I don't know.
No, that's true. He's up a division.
You know, you're sandbagging. Like, come on. Pick on someone your own size.
No kidding. There's nobody his size.
That would be banging, though, because as long as Collier fights the way he fought here, I'm so here for it.
Yeah.
He came out really aggressive, throwing his hammers and just knowing what he wanted to do. And I really like that. This is a dangerous Jake.
Yeah. This was fun. Wasn't the highest level heavyweight fight we've ever seen. But if you're going to go out there and live by the sword, die by the sword in that division, I will happily watch it anytime. All right, let's get to what was a pretty high level fun fight for all three rounds. Brandon Royval, Rogerio Bontorin, and it's impossible to have a Royval fight that isn't fun.
Yeah, he is nonstop.
Yeah,
he is. We're saying Cater was on the gas pedal the whole night. This guy is like on the nitrous the whole night.
Yes,
yeah. He is just. He doesn't ever stop. Like he never settles.
I really thought that if he let Rogerio Bontorin put him in a bunch of bad grappling positions, which he did, that Bontorin would be the guy controlling the fight and in position to win in the final round. You know, that it would be Bontorin who would be the one who would turn that into his advantage with cardio, his advantage with position strength. And domination and strength. Yeah. And it was Royval was just, as you say, like he was on the nitrous all the way through. For him to be out there in the third round, hitting a sweep and then just blasting Bontorin from top position right up to the bell. Like that is the kind of cardio you have to be a contender at flyweight. You know?
Oh, absolutely. That was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And Zane, did Royval win twice tonight?
Did he
get a tap with that armbar out of
there? There was a single slap on the leg. You could say it was a tap. I would not have felt awful had the ref jumped in right then and said it was a tap. But Royval didn't react, the ref didn't react, and the fight, they both kept going just as hard as they were right before it. So I'm fine with the non-call, you know?
Yeah.
It wasn't one of those things where Royval...
Yeah, I'm fine with the non-call too.
Yeah. It's not that, like Royval let go and then got punched in the face while complaining to the ref, you know?
It's, that was crazy though. It was like Bontorin, like, he was going to do the, oh, I'm training. I'm going to tap and save my arm. But then he was like, wait, I'm in a fight. Damn that. I got a wind bonus on the line.
Yeah.
That was nuts, though. But credit to Royval for being so freaking active off his back. Yeah. even on the feet, he's throwing all the volume coming forward. But even off his back, he's spamming elbows, walking up his legs in a high guard, trying to look for submissions. He's just constantly attacking and attacking. And that's tough to deal with.
It is. Like, you got to, you know, you look at the fighters who beat him, Brandon Moreno and Alexandre Pantoja, and you really got to look at guys who could actually high-speed scramble with him the whole time on the mat. And you got to be able to do that, because Royval will not rest for a second. And you got to be able to put him away. You got to hang with him every second of the way, because if you... You know, if you start to slow down even a little bit, like Bontorin was still doing great in round three. He slowed down just a little, and Royval was immediately on top of him winning.
Oh, yeah. He slowed down at the wrong time.
Yep.
On the bottom. That's tough. But it was very, very smart for Royval to just start unleashing those elbows. You know, you got the position. You need to let him go, especially in a really close fight like this. This was a close one.
Yeah. Do you know now what fight I want to see?
What, with Royval?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or Askarov?
Nah. Askarov's, I think he's booked to fight Kaikara France right now. But Mono Cop.
Ooh. Man. That's very interesting. Right? Some volume versus... A crafty knockout artist?
Yeah, versus a big power hitter. Like somebody who really can knock people out. Because it's not like Bontorin didn't land clean. Royval is kind of a no-defense, all-offense fighter.
Yeah.
And he doesn't even particularly like grappling, for as good as he is at it. You hear him in interviews, you hear him talking about, like, after the fight, he's so disappointed. And, like, he wants to be out there and stand and bang, so... Throwing him in the ring with Mono Cop to see what would happen.
I thought it was interesting that he said he needed to work on his balance, and because he was falling mm-hmm. all over the place during the fight. But like, why are you gonna work on your balance?
Right, get him up on one of those those balance balls, doing box jumps or doing whatever kind of nonsense training videos.
No, it's touch butt in the park. You know,
there you go. That's right. You got to get him some pool noodles.
It's the only way, Zane. Movement
it's the trips. Only way. But Royval is—he's a ton of fun, and I can't wait to see him fight again.
He's so wicked. He's just wicked. Yeah. He's just so nasty from everywhere.
That was a great fight. Him, Bontorin, really just fun, high action flyweight bout. That brings us to Caitlin Chookagian versus Jennifer Maia, which was not a bad fight. Totally solid 3-round kickboxing bout, essentially.
Yeah.
Also totally pointless. Like, we saw this fight a couple of years ago and it went exactly the same, and for the exact same reasons, which is just that Jennifer Maia can't push up a high enough pace to outstrike Caitlin Chookagian.
Which I think is going to be the same song and dance for a lot of Caitlin's fights.
Mm-hmm.
But she's fought everyone. She's going to have a lot of rematches coming up.
Yeah.
And it's just going to be the same thing. It's just her style. She's long and tough to deal with for 125. She's willing to just let her hands go and be long. And I felt like she was extra aggressive with her strikes tonight, and extra willing to bite down and put a little more mustard on her right hands.
That's definitely a big adjustment I think we've seen out of her from that. It was actually an adjustment she was making kind of going into that Shevchenko loss, but now a couple fights removed. Like, she had this, you know, with Antonina Shevchenko, she came out and she did a bunch of grappling. And then she fought Jessica Andrade and just got smoked. And now I think in the past couple fights, she's kind of come back around to this idea that, like, I need to be a striker that people have to be more cautious about if I want to do anything. I can't just be the volume person, or somebody like Andrade or Shevchenko is just going to come out and they're just going to walk through me and treat me like I'm not there.
And this was the perfect fight to work on that, because, I mean, she just beat her 2 years ago.
Yep.
Like, they just fought. So this was still pretty fresh. But solid win for her.
Mm-hmm. afterwards, you call out Misha Tate, who's already booked to fight Lauren Murphy. But honestly, I'd be happy to see Chookagian take on the winner of that fight. You know, Chookagian's still right around in that, you know, gateway to the champ kind of position where she might as well just fight anybody. And while she did fight Murphy before, that was like 5 years ago. So I'm here for that if they want to do it. And if Tate wins, then Tate Chookagian feels like a fine idea too.
Yeah, if they don't bump Tate right to a title, I'm for it.
Yeah, I don't think. I mean, they might, but.
Yeah, just for the name.
Yeah, it could be just for the name. But otherwise, yeah, it's probably just going to be a lot of Caitlin Chookagian treading water unless Shevchenko wants to fight like every 3 months and just doesn't care who it's against. Then she'll probably get another title shot.
Yeah, I don't mind Chookagian fights. She's consistent. I feel like you know what you're going to get out of her.
And if she steps down, you know, if she's willing to sit down on her punches a little more, then she's going to make her fights a lot more interesting. Because the big thing early in her career was just kind of her Holly Holman it out there, where it's just
the key eyes.
The key eyes, and then all the strikes, all the volume you're not landing, you know?
Right.
Throwing a four punch combo and landing only the slapping body kick on the end of it.
Yeah, I like her fights now. Yeah. You know who I really like? The Slava Claus.
Slava Claus. Vyacheslav right. Borshev.
Oh, yeah. This guy's he's a lot of fun. He's got superstar potential.
Yeah. I mean, I picked Dakota Bush going into this because I was really rooting for Borshev. And I'm just like, man, his style is so thin, though. It's just like throwing wicked heaters in the pocket. And that's it. With bad takedown defense.
It's Aaron Pico without the wrestling.
Yeah. And so I was picking Bush for exactly the reasons we saw. Bush came out, he got instant takedowns and took Borshev's back almost immediately.
But, he rocked him. He rocked him on the feet.
He rocked him standing. But Borshev is just, he's just a ton of fun. And the way
he's a winner.
And the way he punches in the pocket, the way he turns into those strikes, like, you better get him out of there. Because if you don't, he is landing the kind of power shots inside that a lot of MMA fighters, boxing, is not made for.
Yeah, that educated left hand, man. Ugh. It is a thing of beauty. And it goes to the head and it goes to the body like we saw here. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm kind of making that Aaron Pico comparison, because Pico has that same sort of lethal boxing that's super crisp and all it takes is one, you know, regardless of where it lands, just one clean punch is going to, you know, can potentially put you away. And like, I will always tune in for that.
Yeah.
So he comes out, right? He makes this super exciting. He almost loses, comes back. He wins in exciting fashion with a body shot. And then he starts doing the little Russian dance where he's on his knees and starts breakdancing. And man, this guy is so much fun, dude.
Yeah, I'm here for it. I don't care how much he wins or loses. Just get him up into that. Get him into that like Drew Dober stratosphere where he's kicking around the upper middle of the lightweight division, fighting every few months and fighting every action fighter on the roster. And that's all I want to see.
He needs to fight Paddy Pimblett. That's what he needs to do.
I would definitely watch that. I'd also watch him fight Otman Nazaitar or Guram Kutadaladze or like just anybody. You know?
I feel like Pimblett's the way to go, man. They had such a very similar debut. You know, like, I need to see it.
All right. Yeah.
I need it. I need it, Zane.
Okay. Okay. I, you know what? I won't say no to that. I would watch the hell out of that fight. So, all right. That brings us to a featherweight bout. Bill Algeo, Joanderson Brito. And this went a lot of the way I thought it would, with the exception, I will say, Brito did a lot better down the stretch than I thought he would, too.
I bet you this fight is probably a lot better than it was real time, just because it was the ass end of all those decisions.
Yes, it very clearly was a really pretty fun back and forth rock 'em sock 'em fight that we kind of forget about because it was coming off Pickett Holmes, which just sucked.
I feel like I'm going to have to revisit this fight at another time to truly appreciate it. But it really was a grueling fight.
Mm-hmm.
It was scrappy, and you know, it's not that Brito wasn't trying. He would flurry to the point of exhaustion and then just flail on a takedown and kind of just hold on for dear life with like broken posture. And
he would land two or three shots that looked like they had Algio on skates or like hurt and ready for the kill. And then he would clinch him up and let Algio recover a little. And Algio is, you know, may not have all the slickness of Calvin Kattar, but he's got all the toughness. He's a dude that if you give him a couple seconds to recover, he will be right back on form, throwing all the volume at you, taking the fight to you, making the fight hell on you. And if you're only going to hit him really hard and you're not going to drop him, then Algio outlanding you 2-1 is just, you know, it's going to win him that fight.
Yeah, that toughness, man. He really is tough and willing to just stand there and let his hands go, let his volume go. I think he might be two beers away from being Colby Covington also.
What in the hell was that post fight call out?
I don't know, man. I didn't understand it. I don't even think it made any sense, but, he might be trying to run with that gimmick. That might be his thing.
We got a new MAGA MMA star in our midst.
We got a Colby clone.
Yeah.
Colby will be flattered.
I'm sure. I can just imagine him right now being super flattered about
that. Now there's two of them.
Yeah. All right. Moving right along. Middleweight bout, Jamie Pickett, Joseph Holmes. I kind of already spoiled the surprise on this one, which was that it was bad.
Is that a surprise?
No, but I mean, you know, for those who are listening to us go down this card in order and hadn't seen the fight. But it was, you know, credit to Pickett for hanging tough and winning this. He talked about it a little after the bout, but it's just really clear from watching him fight that fighting gives him a lot of anxiety. He has it takes a lot to really force him to move forward and throw strikes and be aggressive. And he's getting better at it. He's doing more of it. And Holmes, as a relative newcomer, was just kind of a good chance for him to work that out and push it a little harder, because Holmes doesn't seem like he has the same problem, but is also just kind of very awkward and doesn't have a lot of fluidity or rhythm to his game at all. So
no, just absolutely willing to pull the trigger. So mm-hmm. Someone trigger shy against someone who's just willing to let it rip, even to the point of exhaustion. I think he kind of petered out a little bit there, maybe because it's his first go in the UFC, which I understand.
He wasn't really ready for the step up. And Pickett, you know, for as trigger shy as he is a big, strong, fast, serious athlete with a ton of range. So when he did start pulling the trigger, he was hitting Holmes really hard, you know?
Yeah, but he didn't start pulling the trigger until he saw Holmes start to slow down.
Yeah, he really has to kind of talk his way into getting into the fight.
Yeah, he got to, you know, dip his toes in the pool first to see what mm-hmm. the temperature's like.
So that fight happened, and Pickett won it, and that's good enough.
Fun fact, Zane. Everybody on the preliminary card is now on a 2-fight winning streak.
Wow, that is a fun fact. I'm having more fun already.
No, that's the funnest part of the prelims.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Get to a welterweight bout. Court McGee, Ramiz Brahimai, I think, actually. Or is it?
Your guess is better than mine, Zane.
Okay. I'll say Brahimai, Ramiz Brahimai. And I kind of thought this might happen. I know Brahimai was the favorite going in, But I was looking at this fight and I'm just like, who out grapples Court McGee? Nobody.
Yeah, true.
Nobody out grapples him. And that is Brahimi's path to victory. So Court McGee just went out there and turned it up on the kid and broke him.
Oh, man. Yeah. He broke him in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
When once he dropped him at the end of the first.
Yeah.
I feel like that was it. That was at that point, it was clear who was who.
Yep.
McGee sunned this kid. He sunned him everywhere.
Like, great win for McGee.
Pulled his veteran card on him.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, that sets up a fight that I think has to happen now.
With Court?
Yeah, with Court McGee. It's a rare thing for me to feel like there's a fight with Court McGee that has to happen.
What are you going to say, like Matt Brown or something?
Nah. Max Griffin.
They haven't fought yet?
Right?
Are you sure?
Right?
Damn. I feel like they definitely would have fought by now. Yeah, I'm here for that. Why not?
Yeah. Once it came into my mind, I was like, wait, they should have already fought. They could fight three times and I'd be happy.
I feel like they have very similar styles too.
Yeah, exactly.
Like unsuspecting power in the hands. They're both unsuspecting grapplers.
They're both gritty as hell. They go out there, they mix it up with everybody. Griffin is on a 3-fight win streak and he can barely remember a damn one of them. Like,
what are you talking about? He's the guy that exploded Brahimi's ear.
Oh, yeah, that's true. They both have a win over Ramiz Brahimi.
So, yeah, that actually makes a ton of sense.
So,
and you know, it's candidate for fight of the night too.
Yeah,
you know that's going to be a bloody war.
Yeah, so I got to see good that call. Now for Court McGee.
Good call, Zane. Starting out 2022 strong. I see.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, that brings us to a featherweight bout: Brian Kelleher, Kevin Kroom. Credit to Kevin Kroom for stepping up on like 2 days' notice. I was actually pretty interested in that fight with Kelleher and Kakhramonov. But Kroom made this fight at least a little bit interesting, you know. He was big. He kept a pace on Kelleher. He forced Kelleher to really have to go out and get to his grappling game and not just try to outbox Kroom. And credit to Kelleher for getting that done. It was a fine fight in a whole string of fights that were kind of forgettable.
Exceptionally forgettable. But he did score that knockdown.
Yeah.
So shout out to him in Court for making the prelims exciting.
Yeah.
And at least a little bit exciting.
Yeah.
Noteworthy. They made it noteworthy.
Doesn't do anything for Kelleher, but it got him a win. It got him a win bonus. And, you know, you hope that the UFC rewards Kroom for doing them a favor, because now he's on two losses and a no contest due to marijuana, the stupidest kind of no contest.
Marijuana?
Yeah. Marijuana? Man's a drug addict.
You ever suck dick for marijuana?
Okay.
That's it. I got to shout out Bob Saget. That's a half point.
Yeah, that's
one.
True. That's true.
It's a quote, Zane.
I know it's a quote. It's from Half Baked. I'm not unfamiliar with the movie. And we do have to shout out our man Bob Saget, who tragically passed away. Yeah, may he rest in peace. All right. Let's move on, though, to a lightweight bout. TJ Brown, Charles Rosa. Rosa also stepping in on just a couple days' notice. Then they put this fight up on at lightweight. And, it was all right. Brown came out, put the screws to Rosa. Once he got that once he started controlling the grappling a little bit, it really started to break Rosa's cardio, and then it just became a fight for TJ Brown to win.
Yeah, I actually enjoyed this fight because I enjoy all Charles Rosa fights, because at any moment, no matter what, he could actually possibly win. So I'm always down. He's so scrambly and he's so submission over position oriented. It's just it's fun. That cavalier style of grappling it's just, it's fun to watch from a fan's perspective. Like, he's just trying. He's just trying to make things happen. I like it. I respect it. Even though he often loses decisions.
Yeah, he's got...
It's still fun to watch.
He's got the problem of when he gets taken down, he's not necessarily that concerned about trying to get back up. And credit to TJ Brown, though. He also, you know, took a solid fight to Rosa, made it happen.
I mean, credit to Brown for being able to protect his neck as many times as he had to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how many times was he threatened with a darce, an anaconda, or a guillotine, or a front choke? Or...
It's true. Brown made some really bad moves late in that fight. Now I'm just remembering. Third round, he clearly got really tired, and he kept shooting for takedowns where the moment Rosa did any kind of sprawl at all, Brown just would collapse under him.
Yeah, it was like he would snap down himself.
Yeah, it was some really questionable late decision making for TJ Brown in there. So, you know, made that fight a little more interesting than it maybe should have been, considering how short notice Rosa stepped up on it.
Rosa's just a dog, regardless.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's just who he is as a person.
So yeah, coming back up around to the top, Calvin Kattar, Giga Chikadze, absolutely every bit the fun thriller that we hoped it would be. Both dudes landing huge shots all the way through. Kattar really making this a battle of will, walking down Chikadze, putting the pressure on him, putting the volume on him, making him move backwards, making him tired, making his body language break down, and then ended it all up by dropping Chikadze right there at the end. Really put a stamp on it, claimed the fight.
And just showing him what championship rounds can be about.
Yep. I expect a better Giga Chikadze coming out of this. And yeah, like I said, I got to see Calvin Kattar versus Brian Ortega now.
Oof. Man, they're both so tough. They both rebounded for their Holloway disasters so well.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's a dream matchup.
Yep. So now that is the one fight I got to see coming out of this. And I think on that note, we should wrap everything up. You can find me on Twitter at TheZaneSimon. You can find Eddie on Twitter at TheEddieMercati. You can find both of us over at BloodyElbow.com. Give us a like, subscribe to our podcast. We'll be back next week for UFC 270 and Ngannou vs. Gone.
Thank you for listening to this Bloody Elbow Presents production. To check out more of our content, hop over to the Bloody Elbow Presents SoundCloud and iTunes pages, and be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, which is also titled Bloody Elbow Presents. We're also on Apple TV, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn, Overcast, Player FM, and Amazon Music. Just search for Bloody Elbow Presents, and you'll get brand new shows throughout the week, including Care Don't Care, The Mookie and Crookie Show, The Best of the Come On Now MMA Podcast, Crooklyn's Corner, The MMA Vivisection, The Level Change Podcast, Show Money, The Sixth Round Post-Fight Show, Sixth Round Retro, The MMA Depressed Us, and Radio Style Play-by-Play for every UFC pay-per-view. You can also follow us on Twitter at Bloody Elbow and on Facebook at facebook.com/Bloody Elbow Blog, and of course on BloodyElbow.com.